Thank you so much for having me here today, and David's asked me to speak about barbecue for a little bit, and brisket, and it's funny how many times, even this morning, I was asked if I had brisket with me. I carry it in my pocket all the time. You think I'm joking about this? Actually, you know, barbecue is very biblical, and people don't realize it, they don't appreciate it, but you think about the Israelites, you know, all the time in the desert and stuff, what did God ask them to do? Burn meat, you know, smoke it. It was a sacrifice. I got so content and argue today. They say it started in Barbacoa. I said, I don't know. It started way back in Israel a long, long time ago, sacrificing to God. Actually, what David has asked me, so given me the opportunity to speak about today, is purpose. And purpose and how it ties into passion and how it ties so much into what we do on a day-to-day basis. You see, I very much believe one of the greatest purposes in life is to find what our passion is and then lose ourselves in pursuing it. Lose ourselves in finding what is. Because you see, our passion is something that God gives us. Okay, it's not something that we think it is. And so often, actually, and I'm the same case, we get in our own way of achieving what that calling is and achieving what that purpose is because we think we should be doing something different. And I'm a very classic example of 20 years going down a corporate path, even though a long time ago when I was just a child, it was in my heart of what I love to do. You ever ask a little child, a boy or a little girl, what do you want to be when you grow up? You know, and it's great. You see the answers come uninhibited. There is no fear whatsoever. Oh, I want to be an NBA basketball player. I want to own a restaurant. I want to be a doctor. I want to be a nurse, no matter what it is. And there's nothing that's telling them. Nobody has told them why they can't be something. Okay? And once you hear that, it's amazing how you start to believe it. Words are very, very powerful, either to you or from you. And always keep that in mind. Because it's funny, you start going down a path in life based on what you believe and what you are told by other people. And that starts to influence you. And before you know it, you've gone down so far, it's very difficult to turn around. You know, I found myself, you know, when I was a child, I loved to cook. Absolutely loved it. It was one of my first, I think I was like 7 or 8 years old. My parents didn't wake up early enough for Christmas, and they said, go ahead and cook breakfast for everyone. And they came out, and there was a buffet. I mean, it was hot dogs and Cheerios. And it was a full buffet. And that's what just lit my passion. I just loved it. I loved doing this. Matter of fact, my first job, I was so excited. The day I turned 16, I grew up in Jacksonville, and there was a pizza place there called The Loop. And I went, and I'm all excited, and I'm filling out the application. I'm talking to the manager. I just love to cook, and I want to learn how to do this and this and that. It's just great. Come on in next week. I show up. I'm ready to go into the kitchen. He walks me over to the dishwasher. And he says, welcome to The Loop. This is your job. Now, it was a very interesting lesson. Okay, and this is something I do believe in. You live, I think it's Kierkegaard that said, you live your life moving forward, but you understand your life looking back. Okay, and everything that happens to you is by grand design. Amen. And at the end of the day, no matter how hard it is and how challenging it is, it ultimately shapes you. You wouldn't be who you are today if you didn't go through the trials and tribulations that you went through yesterday. It brings you closer to God. So I read that literally just this morning in devotion that so many people move away from God because of the issue of suffering. And the counter to that, the actual to it is so many people move to God because of the issue of suffering. You know, how many times do you find yourself on your knees praying when you're robust and you're doing great? Versus how many times do you find yourself on your knees when you need God more than ever before? Those are a blessing, not at the time you're in it, but when you look back at it. Well, I learned a lesson about that dishwasher. You know, I put my head down for a few days, and and the days are so slow. And I learned, then the next day I realized, you know what, I can change this. So I came in, and because it was boring back there, I brought my little tape deck. Remember when we were kids? In the 60s, you had these little tape deck with a little handle on it, and you had to tape the songs on the radio, and you know, you had to work around the DJs, he would talk too much. You know? So I brought my tape in, I had like Beach Boys on there and Jimmy Buffett. I started playing it, and you know what, it's funny. People started coming around and hanging out with me at the dishwasher. I'm like, this is kind of cool. So then the next week, I brought these like little tiki lights, you know, and I put them on all around. started kicking in, well, I can time this and see how fast I can do it and how much more efficient. And what I learned was a lesson. If you're not doing something you're passionate about, bring passion into what you're doing. And it is amazing how much that changes everything around you and what you are doing. Now, passion to me is absolutely the key to success. Absolutely. And when your passion aligns with your purpose, the reason God created you, you stand back. You stand back and you allow and you watch God to work in your life, and he will move absolute mountains for you. Well, the manager came in not too long after that, and he noticed what I was doing. And he says, "You're doing a great job. We're going to promote you." He grabs me by the shoulder and walks me out. I'm like, "Yeah, I'm going in the kitchen, going in the kitchen." He walks me out to the floor and says, "Welcome, you're the busboy." You matter of fact, the funny thing is, all my life, you know, all through high school, all through college, I worked to get my way through school. And I worked in restaurants all the time, and I never, ever worked in the kitchen. Never allowed to cook. I had to open my own dang restaurant. I speak to so many different men who find themselves in a situation, well, I'm doing something, but I'm just going through the motion of it. I always tell folks, especially folks who work with me, you know, there's three things that you can get out of work, okay? And there's many things that you do, but three top ones for me is you're going to work on a daily basis because you're learning something, you know? You're educating, you're growing, you're going toward a goal, okay? You need that vocation that's involved in it, and you're working toward it. The second thing is you're doing something that you love to do, okay? You enjoy this on a day-to-day basis. And the third reason is you're doing it because you're getting paid, okay? You have to make money. You got to support a family. Now, there's sometimes in your career that you have all three of them that are hitting at the same time. And I'll tell you, that's just a blessing. Now, you hold on to a good season of life. But all of us know in this room, that's not all the time. But what I caution folks, at the end of the day, the reason that you're waking up early, the reason that you're going in, the reason that you're listening to somebody else and doing what they say, if it all comes down just to the one thing, just to making money, it is a very, very long day. And that translates to a very long life. And it's amazing how many of us get into that situation that we're not learning, we're certainly not doing something we love to do, okay, but we feel that we have to do this. I've got mortgages, I've got car payments, I've got kids in school, on and on and on. And I ask people, why aren't you doing something that you love to do? And you know, and it's an exercise. I said, close your eyes. And then people ask, well, how do I know what my calling is? Close your eyes and think of something. What would you like to be doing on a day-to-day basis that would get you excited, okay? That would make you come alive? And it can't be sitting on a beach, you know, drinking margaritas. It has to be productive. And it's amazing when that inhibition goes down, right? I want to be literally, these are literal. I want to be a coach, okay? I want to do track. I want to run a camp. You know, I've always wanted to paint. And I always ask, well, what stops you from doing that? And it's me. You know, I've got mortgage. I do have bills. I have this and that. Well, what makes you think that you won't be successful if you're doing what God has asked you to do? You know, fear is the number one weapon the enemy uses to keep us away from doing what God intended us to do. And what does it say in 2 Timothy 1:7? For God did not give us the spirit of fear, but one of courage and of strength. What that means is that when we're listening to fear, you know what the onset of fear is? It's worry. You know, the onset of worry is, it's doubt. And when we start listening to those words of doubt and how we can't do something and how we're restricted, we're listening to the enemy. And that's what he wants. He wants to keep you down. I promise you, he doesn't want you to be successful in what he intended you to be, because one day you're going to stand in front of men and you're going to encourage them to follow what God's asked them to do. He doesn't want that to happen. Okay, he keeps you from it. Now let me tell you, when you identify what that is that inspires you, that gets you revved up, okay, right, you're going to have to go after it. And there's going to be perseverance that's absolutely required. And the reason being, if it was so easy, everybody would be doing it. But more importantly, God, when you get into a situation and a challenge and you're pursuing what He's asked you to do, what He's looking for, He's more interested not in you figuring out how to overcome it, but in how you're going to turn to Him to overcome it. You think about like David. Okay? When David was anointed to be king, okay? Remember how long it took him until he became king, until he was called to be a king? It was 12 years in his life. And during those 12 years, those are the 12 most tenuous years of his life. Okay? Because he was on the run. His life was in threat. Why did God put him through that after He just told him He's going to be king? He was teaching him, rely on Me. Now, there's a book out there called Strengthening Yourself in the Lord. And it talks so much, by Bell Johnson, it talks so much about that, that once you learn how to give up that control factor and trust God. And it's not just trusting God, it's talking to God, to ask God. You know the word prayer in Hebrew? You know what it means? What the actual, the literal translation of it? It means to discuss, to talk. What God is asking us to do is to talk to Him. And don't you do that with your children? Don't you want to pour into them? You want to just be, tell me about your day. It was okay. What do you do? Nothing. What do you learn at school? Nothing. You want more, right? You're going to do something at that dinner table that's going to make him talk one way or another. I believe that's very much what God does, too. Well, sometimes you have to kind of be shaken up a little bit. And you got to wake up what God has put in your heart. And by the way, that's where He puts that passion. That's where He puts that seed. The word heart is used 892 times in the Bible. And I think it's for a reason. It's third only to God and to Lord. And it's because that's where He speaks to us. You know, I wish it was a thundering voice. I wish it was very clear. I wish it was a text. You know, telling me, this is what you're to do today. You know? But it's not. It's in here. And we have to train ourselves from looking and listening to the world and to feeling and listening to our heart. That's where God is going to talk to us. Well, sometimes you got to kind of, something's got to happen in your life when you're going down this path and you kind of lose sight of what that passion, that purpose is. You know, I said so often it's, you know, we get in our own way. And it's usually a disruption in life that kind of moves you in that direction. Mine was my father left us when I was a freshman, my freshman year in college, and I had to come back and take care of a family. I have three siblings, and had to figure out, you know, the money left with them, how am I going to get my way through school? And it took an awful long time, but worked and did it and got there, okay? And it taught me such a lesson of perseverance, okay? But unfortunately, the result of that, you ever meet someone who is so controlling, you know? Most of the time, a controlling person has gone through something in their life, okay, an adverse situation that causes them to put these walls up because they're not going to get hurt again. And you want to control that situation. And it's funny how control is so much what God is the opposite. And He's asking you to trust and to let go. And we put ourselves in these walls. And I certainly did. And I had a goal. I was going to get through college. And it took me a while. Okay? I was going to get through college. And more than that, I was going to be the president. And I was going to be the CEO of a big, and I wanted to go into healthcare for some reason. And I'm going to be the president of a healthcare company. And it's funny how I just put my head down. And I was a very different person. I was driven. If you asked me coming out of college, what are your goals? And what I would have said, they would have all been financially based. I wouldn't even think about it. By the time I'm 30, I want to be making this. By the time I'm 35, I want to be making this and doing this. It was so much in that direction. I had forgotten about completely within that little boy who just loved to cook. But I did move out to Texas after college. And it's funny, something happened there. You know, I went out there and I always joke and I said, you know, I met the two loves of my life. You know, my beautiful wife, Monica, and brisket. And I grew up here in Jacksonville. We never had brisket before. You know, we had pork. And it was that's what I knew of barbecue. And I'll never forget, you know, sitting down at Thanksgiving dinner, and her cousins are just making fun of me because I had never had brisket before. And, you know, testosterone of a 23-year-old. Well, I'm gonna learn how to make it. Dang it, I'm gonna learn how to make it better than any of you guys that are sitting around here.
I had no clue.
You know, I didn't have a smoker. I'd never done anything like that before, but I was just gonna make sure that I knew how to do it. And for the next 18 years, literally, as I traveled throughout the United States, you know, I was in my job, you know, my poor assistant, she would have to set up the appointment at a hospital, and three appointments, you know, three times, going to different barbecue places, for years and years, just honing and practicing and honing and practicing. So it was there, and I loved to do it, but I was still driven. Okay? And one day, I found myself on the phone, coming back from Lake Mary. This is when I was president of the company, and I was complaining about my job to a former peer who had grown, who had excelled at Johnson & Johnson as well. And I hung up the phone, and I said to myself, I can't believe I'm in this position. Here I am telling my employees all the time, if you're not doing something you're passionate about, you can't bring passion into it, go do something different. Life is too short. You're not going to be productive. You're not going to get the most out of what you can be if you're just going through emotions. I promise you that. And I found myself doing that. And I was absolutely at a crossroad. And then it happened. That's when God stepped in. Because one day I was sitting at my desk. And on my desk I had my phone. And there's two lines. There's a line that goes through my assistant. And that's 90% of the calls that are screened. And the line that comes direct and rings straight to me. And there's only two people that called that line. It was my wife and my boss. And so when it rang, I picked it up pretty quickly. It rang one afternoon, and I will never forget. I picked up the call, and it was a lady on the other end, and she's crying. And the words I won't forget, she says, Mr. Rivers, says, I'm so sorry to hear about your daughter. I said, well, what's wrong with Cameron? My daughter is in kindergarten at the time. She says, well, her terminal brain tumor. Now, from the time that I hung up the phone with her until I reached Monica, it took about 20 minutes. Okay? And even though I was in healthcare, and consequently, I was in the cancer treatment business, okay? Never, ever before had it been personalized. Never before did I have any inclination of what it was like to be the father or related to somebody who's going through something like that. You know that old saying that, you know, if money can solve the problem, it's not a real problem. I promise you, when you face something that it doesn't matter how much money you have, it doesn't matter what title you have, it doesn't matter what you drive, you can't fix it. That's a real problem. I spoke with Monica, and it wasn't Cameron. It wasn't her. And I said, well, who in the world, who called? Who did this? And so, who is his family? It moved me so much, I said, we're going to find out who this little girl was. And we did. It took us about a week. Okay? Now, here's the weird thing about it. Right? That little girl, Megan. Megan wasn't in Cameron's class. Megan didn't go to the same school that Cameron went to. We didn't go to the same church with this family. They didn't live in our neighborhood. They didn't live in the same city. We weren't in the same industries whatsoever. There's absolutely, absolutely no connection. There's no reason that that phone call should have come to me that day. And I know it wasn't a mistake. One, it came through my father. Two, I remember the words, Mr. Rivers, Mr. Rivers. And what's amazing, this was back in 2004. It's over 10 years now. And as many times as I've told this story, as many times as it's been written about, to this day, we still don't know who the phone call came from. No one has ever, ever, ever said, oh yes, that was me. Ever. But had that phone call not happened, which it's funny how it's a calling, had that phone call not happened, I wouldn't be here. I'm convinced I would not be doing this today. Because it stirred me so much. I told her, I said, we found family. We're going to pour into them. And what's funny, at first I was pouring into just worldly things. You know, I helped them get Indigent Care product, and I helped them line them up with financial aid from pharmaceutical companies and this and that. And about 2 weeks into it, I realized they don't need more drugs, they don't need more nursing, they need money. I know what they're going through. So I called the father up and I said, hey, I said, let me write you a check. And it's funny, later in life, I had the opportunity to get involved with the Caffeys. You want to get them off your doorstep quickest? You write them a check. You want to pour into their lives? You want to help them grow? You share your time. You share your testament. You share your talents and things that you've learned that help them grow. Okay, I hadn't learned that lesson quite yet. I called, I said, hey, let me write you a check. And he said, absolutely not. We argued about it for a while and hung up the phone. And then that's when I felt that push. Remember I talked about how God, he's going to push you in your heart. You know, it's one thing to pray for God to talk to you. Okay, it's another thing to pray that you can listen. You know, a bigger prayer, you're going to do what he asks you to do. That's where the courage comes in. It's listen and obey. Obeying is sometimes the scariest part. Well, I picked the phone back up. I called him. I didn't know what I was going to say. I said, hey, John. I said, it's me again. He says, yeah, I know. I just told you no. I said, I appreciate that. I said, hey, and I was literally making this up. I said, why don't we do a barbecue for you, okay, at your church. It'll be a fundraiser. And all the money from it is going to go for little Megan. And he called his wife. He called me back later. I said, sure. Okay, we'll go ahead and do that. Now get this, right? The event was 10 days later, okay, at his church, all right? Now, meanwhile, I'm running this, you know, I'm kind of busy. I'm running this business, right? I told you, I learned about cooking barbecue throughout all these years, but I'd always done it in my backyard, okay? And for like 10 or 12 people, and quite frankly, it wasn't always good. And we were doing a lot of practicing, right? Well, this event happened 10 days later. 450 people RSVP. Okay? It caught on fire, all right? And the community came together to support this little girl. And we didn't have the equipment. We didn't have the know-how. We didn't know how to store this much stuff. Literally, I had no idea what we were doing. And it was by the grace of God that we raised a lot of money for this beautiful little girl. We pulled it off. Right? We raised a lot of money for this little girl. We fed an awful lot of people, and nobody got sick. And I'll never forget, that was the life-changing event. But I'll never forget that night. I'm wiped. Absolutely wiped. And Monica's like, you okay? I said, man, I feel incredible. She says, what do you mean? I said, I'm okay. That was amazing. It was the first time ever that I had combined my passion, what God put in my heart, okay, with a greater purpose, okay, help other people. Bring God into what I'm doing from a vocation, do it for a purpose and help other people. And now this was at the very beginning of my spiritual journey and awakening, okay? And I think it was on purpose to be like this too. Okay, that whole thing about not understanding why things happen, and you know, until you look back, you know, it's the old story of when you look at these beautiful tapestries. You know, have you guys ever seen what a tapestry looks like from behind? Okay, you look behind it, it's a mess. It's a mess. There's strings and wires and stuff going all over the place. Well, I think that's how we see our life. Okay, you look at it, this doesn't make sense. Why is it there's so many loose ends? Where is this going? You look on the front side, and I think that's the side that God sees. It's a beautiful work of art, and he's weaving it. And he knows where it's going and why it's like that. And he doesn't feel compelled to tell us why. Just simply ask to trust him, knowing that he has got a purpose for it. Well, that sparked up, you know, in me. It woke that passion up. So for the next 4 years, we started what was called our barbecue ministry. And out of the garage, anytime schools or kids or churches would call and they want money, they want funding, you know, I'd offer, well, let me light the smoker up. And I mean, it started, you know, little one and the one on the, you know, wheels. And then before you know it, I had this great big one. And it got bigger and bigger every year. Too much Monica would say, you're just doing this so you can get bigger smokers. I know she's right to a degree. But it just kept growing. And what was happening is I would find the disparity, the gap between what I was doing Monday through Friday and who I was completely different of who I was on Saturday, Sundays when I was stepping into this role. And it started to wear on me mentally. And because it became so apparent, the two different people at odds with each other. You ever hear that old story about the Indian chief, and he's talking to his grandchild, and he's telling him how there's two wolves in him and everybody that fight. And these two wolves, one is good spirit, you know, and doing good things and being productive, and the other wolf is a bad spirit. and it's evil, and it's destructive, and they constantly fight with each other. And the grandson asked the grandpa, he said, well, which one wins? And the grandpa looked at him and he said, the one you feed. And how true that is. What we lean into defines who we are. Who we listen to. What words we aspire to. It not only affects our actions, but our true inner being. And once we start making that change, when we listen to the good word, okay, and we listen to the encouragement, because I promise you, there's more negativity out there than there is good. You know, and I meet with people who are out of a job and are looking for something. I said, what do you, tell me what you do in the morning. What's the first thing you do? Well, I turn the TV on, okay, the news, telling how the unemployment rate is, or the interest rate, or how much cost is. I go to my email, or I go to text, or I go to the Wall Street Journal, the paper, negative, negative, negative. You start your day, you're filling your soul with that. You just did, you're stepping into that negativity, and it's harder and harder to pull out. I challenge them, do me a favor, get your coffee, find a seat. I said, before you turn any of that on, because it's going to be there, you're not missing anything, I promise you that, just open up the Bible. It's even 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Just fill yourself with positive word. And what you will see, day over day, week over week, you start strengthening yourself and getting that courage. Because it's good, you're going to face a negative. You know, I always tell people, I promise you, today good things will happen and today bad things will happen. And the only difference between those two, okay, you can't control the bad things that happen. But what you can control is how you allow the bad things to affect you. And that's what he wants to happen. Well, we did this ministry for 4 years. Absolutely loved it. And it grew, and it grew, and it grew. And I found myself going to it more often and more often, as much as I could actually do it. Okay? And then and one day, that crossroads happened, that phone call with my friend from Johnson & Johnson, and it made me realize I need to make a change. And shortly thereafter, we've sold our company. I was in a 10-year earnout process. My 2 years was coming up. You know, it was this November, and I had to make a decision by March. And I never forget sitting down and chatting with my boss, and she's telling me all of these different options of directions I could go. Now, you ever talk to somebody, and you're looking right at them, you know their mouth is moving, you know words are coming out, you know, but you're not hearing a darn word? And I was praying, just, you know, give me guidance in this, tell me what to do. And it's funny, you know, I look back on my prayer journal, and I knew a change was coming. But I was praying, just, God, please put me, move me. I knew how unhappy I was, but I was resistant to make that step because I didn't know what that step was. And I just wanted complete assurance that it was going to, because we had a lot of debt. We had all this stuff. You know, and it was, I think it was Mark Twain that said, you know, if you wait for the perfect circumstances, okay, to step into something, to an opportunity, you'll never see that opportunity. There are perfect opportunities, perfect situations out there. And he also said, too, which is one of the things that I love, it's 20 years from now, you'll look back with regret on the things that you did not try versus those that you did try and failed at. Because you never know, could I have done it? What would it have been like? And I'm sitting there talking to her, and I'm praying, dear God, please tell me what you want me to do. Tell me what to do. And dang it, I heard two words. Trust me. And I literally stopped and I said, what? Just trust me. I did. You know, there's a correlation of obedience and blessing. You know, take a look back in Genesis when God's talking to Abraham. Okay, he's telling him one of the favorite passages of so many people is how he's going to grow his family. And his descendants will be like sand on the beach. Okay, and whoever you bless, I will bless. And whoever you curse, I will curse. And people love to cling on to that, right? But once you read the lines above it, literally, right before it, okay? Abram, he called him Abram back then before he became Abraham. He says, I want you to leave your land. Leave your father's household, okay? Leave everything you know, and I want you to go into a direction into the desert, which I will tell you later. Okay?
He didn't give them any detail, okay? He just said, trust me. Leave all the securities you have in your life and take that step. And then, and only then, you allow me to pour blessings into you that I have in store for you. When God calls you to do something, okay? Like I said, the easiest part is to hear it. The hardest part is to do it. To have the courage to step into it. So I listened to her, and I said, okay, I made up my decision. She says, oh, great, what are we going to do? I said, I'm going to go ahead and retire and resign from this. Her reaction was similar to that of my wife's. Then, you know, about an hour later, I'm in the car, and I'm driving home, and I was back then I was as anal as it got. Okay, I'm a routine freak, all right? And it's like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I call her, and she's like, oh, you're in the car. I said, yes. She says, I didn't know you were flying out today. I'm not. She says, well, today's not your haircut day. You know, why are you in the car? You know, what's going on? And I told her what I did. And she asked me a very important question. She says, what are we going to do? Now, I laugh about it, okay, but this is an important part, okay? My response was, I don't know. Okay, she'd never heard those words from me before. How symbolic, looking back, that was one of the first times I listened to God's prompting, and I was no longer in control. Okay? So much of that control factor keeps us and inhibits us so many times from doing what God wants us to do, what He's given us the ability to do and to become. And how I didn't know how significant those words were at that time. I don't know. And I didn't know what we were going to do. I honestly didn't. You know, I was doing the ministry, and I loved it. And I was having a great time with it. But, you know, we had bills to pay. We had things to do. So I started doing healthcare consulting, okay, and traveling all over the country and helping biotechs launch products and build strategies and this and that. Well, meanwhile, it gave me more time to do more of the ministry work. Okay, so the ministry grew. And all of a sudden, I started finding myself seeking out kids and schools and organizations aggressively, saying, hey, let me help you with this. And we did it. We did it, especially those last 2 years. And we did it as a ministry. We never did it as a business, ever. We weren't a caterer. We never took money for it at all. It was a gift that we gave to these people. And absolutely, that last year, we did so much of it. We counted one time, it was almost 70,000 people that we fed literally out of the garage. And that was a true prompt for the little place on Fairbanks. How many of you guys ever went to that, the first little place? God bless you. You parked in one of 11 parking spots. I hope you did at least. And that place wasn't supposed to be a restaurant. That place was supposed to be just a little commissary that we could run the ministry out of, to cook out of, because I always said we had to get into a licensed facility, which is true. My wife said, no, I wanted him out of the house. He was making such an absolute mess. So we built that thing. Now, even though I if you ask me, I would love to have a restaurant. I would love to do that. And I always did since I was a little kid. But we built that to be a commissary, just to cook out of. And we started building it. And this was in 2009. Now, do you guys remember the economic climate back in 2009? Or are you like me? You blocked it out as much as you can. We were so naive. We walk into this thing, and we were working with a contractor, and God bless him, he told us it was going to cost $188,000. We had this little thing drawn up and everything, and it was only supposed to take like 3.5-4 months, right? Okay. We're 6 months into it. Okay. I've got over $500,000 of my capital poured into this thing. And, oh, by the way, God bless him, the contractor was in such a negative cash flow situation with everything else, he's gone. The project is at an absolute stop, okay, on Fairbanks, okay? Now, not only that, okay, that $500,000 that I poured into it was what I put aside after retirement, okay, all the rest of the funds I put into mutuals, that were down 60%, okay? And then we built this big, beautiful house that literally the day we moved into it, okay, we were upside down, okay? For the first time, though, my wife and I, neither of us had a penny to our name when we got married, okay? But that was a long time ago, okay? and God had blessed us many, many years. First time in our marriage, we found ourselves down, almost running out of cash. We were down to 60 days of cash, okay? And it's amazing how fast that happened. In 2 years, what happened to this? And I was at a standstill, and I didn't know what was going to happen. Now, she doesn't agree with this necessarily, but I will say, as tough as those times were, I look back and I cherish them, because never in my life, ever, even to this day, was I ever as close to God as I was back then. Because, you know, that old saying that you don't realize that all you need is Jesus until all you have is Jesus. You know, there's a reason for those trials, and He was teaching me. He was breaking that precedent. He was breaking that pride. He's teaching me just to depend on me. And I had to, because I didn't have anything else whatsoever. Then the temptations come in, okay? I got a phone call from my old boss. He says, hey, John, I'm at ground zero, okay? I have no solution. I don't know how to get out of this mess, right? We're gonna buy three specialty pharmacies. We're going to headquarter them here in Orlando. And we'd like to know if you would like to be the CEO, president of it. Now, it seemed like so much of a blessing, an answer to a prayer. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And it's funny, though, that Friday, my spirits were here when he told me that. But by Saturday, Sunday, they were down here. Because, one, I was remembering what life was like. I didn't like that when I was just working for money. And two, even though as tough as it was at that very moment, I was still alive. I was still pursuing my dream, and I was walking with God. You know, I had no choice but to. I called him up, and thank goodness for the strength of prayer of my wife. And this is an important part. You got to have that partner, okay? Because we made the decision together, and she said, if you feel this is what God has been asking you to do and leading you to do, I will support you, even if it means losing everything we have. Okay? And it's amazing. Once you get to the point of being willing to lose all the material, we had toys, we had boats and cars and all. Once you get that off your back, how clear and easy decisions become. I called him up and I said, Steve, I'm going to pass on it. And he said, why is that? And I told him, I said, I really believe this is what God wants me to be doing. I don't know the answer, but this is what step I want to go. And two, I have two children, two teenagers. I'd rather them see that their father has enough courage to pursue his dream and fail at it versus not having the faith to take those steps. I hung up the phone. Okay. I won't tell you the rest of the story. I'll tell you this. That conglomeration he was putting together, it fell apart 2 months later. Mm-hmm. Had I said yes, I'd have been working, I promise you, back to J&J or something like that. It fell apart. But when I said no to that temptation, and I said yes to God in faith, remember I said things happen, you can't explain? I got two phone calls. Okay, literally, 1 week and then the next week. The first one was a friend of mine. He's in Bible study up in Longwood, okay? And he's got a friend of his who is in the Bible study, who lives in Maitland, who gets his coffee and drives down Fairbanks to I-4 once a week. Okay? This friend, his name's Brad, okay? Brad owns a construction company, and Brad's construction company has two clients in town, okay? Disney and SeaWorld. Yeah. Brad drives by my Enigma on Fairbanks at the time, okay? And that morning, he goes to Bob's place and says, I don't know what it is, but God spoke to me when I went by there this morning. And I don't know who this guy is, but I think he's in trouble. And I think I'm supposed to help him. And my friend who's doing the Bible study says, yeah, he's in big trouble. No, he needs lots of help. And Brad stepped into my life. Okay. Remember before I said we were down to 60 days of cash? Brad got us to CO and open in 59 days. Okay? Next week, the second phone call came in. Right? We're coming back from the beach, and I'm in my truck. We're at the beach a lot because it was free. With the family and stuff. And I'll never forget, I got back in the truck, I went down on my phone, and I had a message from a 404 phone number. I said, who wants to call me from Atlanta? I push it. Right? Mr. Rivers? This is Dan Caffey. He says, I work at Chick-fil-A. I'm like, you don't work at Chick-fil-A. I'm going to drop the phone. And he says, I just had your brisket and your sauce at a party this weekend. So that's the best greatest thing I've ever had. And he says, I just felt compelled to find out who you were and reach into your life. And just want to let you know, I want to help you any way I can. He gives me his phone number, his cell, his assistance number, his home number. Now get this, okay? Someone came down to Orlando that weekend, went to an event that we donated food to, right? Took some of the leftovers back with them to Atlanta, were running late for a dinner party, didn't have time to make something on their own, so they brought my leftover in, put it in the microwave, warmed it up, and Dan tasted it there, okay? You can't orchestrate that kind of stuff. That's not God, I don't know what is. And he stepped into my life, and I'll make it clear, he never financially did anything with us, but he gave me, he poured into me ways, you know, that time, and then that resource, and that, he built me up. He gave me the confidence, we're going to make this thing a restaurant, okay? And I'll never forget, I thought I was still kind of in that little control mode a little bit. I said, well, I got to draw a budget, a P&L, so I know what we're going to do. I said, well, Dan, I said, what do you think we should be doing, you know, on revenue? And he said, well, you know, it was only 1,100 square feet. It was so small. He said, well, he said, if you do about $1,500 a day, you'd be doing about market average. If you do about $2,000 a day, you'd be doing really, really well. It was October 26, 2009. And literally, we were one day away from having, we couldn't write any more checks after that. And all, I forget, all the equipment we had was used. It was broken. It was broken before we opened the door. We didn't have any money to advertise. We couldn't put anything out whatsoever. We literally just put it on Facebook, which I was just learning what Facebook was. And we're going to open tomorrow. And we didn't know what was going to happen. There were only 12 of us. Only 12 of them. And my wife and I were too. I was a carver and she was doing the cash register, go figure. And we didn't know what was going to happen. And then it happened. We just unlocked the doors at 11 o'clock and people started coming in. And at first it was our friends. And then it started being all these people that we fed throughout all those years. And then after that, we didn't know. And we were literally shocked. Who are you? Why are you here? And they were coming in. And that first day, that first week, crushed us. That first day, we did $3,500 in sales. And by multiples, that is the lowest day we've ever had in our history. We just celebrated our 5-year anniversary back in October. We're about ready to open our 10th store up in Tallahassee. We now employ, I think, 1,200 to 1,400 people, jobs that we've created. But more so than jobs, we've never lost our focus of ministry. To this day, you won't see coupons out there. You won't see us in the newspapers and magazines. We don't put any money into advertising. We take all that money and we put it back into the community, just like we always, always have. And people talk about, you know, going and doing mission trips and doing that, which I'm all great for, but my encouragement is, so many times that calling, it's not to go halfway around the world to talk to people about God. I think it's a greater challenge to talk about God in your workplace that you are today.
Amen.
The greater challenge is you bring God into what you're doing, especially in a hostile environment. Okay? You go over there, people are hungry for the word. You come here, they're not. That's more hostile to me. There's plenty of mission field here. And that's how we have run this business from that very day. And I'm so fortunate that we never entered it for a profit perspective. And it was true what they did tell me. Said, you allow the P&L to be a guide for your business, but you never allow the P&L to be the purpose for your business. You keep yourself focused on a purpose of helping people, of impacting lives. And when it's not all about the profit, you have such a greater ability to do that. Let me end with a prayer. If you allow me. Actually something that Nelson Mandela said in his inauguration speech years ago. He says, our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure and capable of doing all that we are called to do. It is our light, not our darkness, that frightens us the most. I pray that each and every one of you who listen to that burning in your heart, listen to God, that you have the courage to follow